Why don't we move?
Move this up? Okay.
Right up here. We don't even want to get ahead of here.
Okay. How about?
You gotta watch that cord. And then could you also move the board up?
I don't know if I'm able to.
Oh, yeah, you can handle it.
Can you just sit here?
That's for all of you people sitting in the back. All right?
Okay, where would you like it? Too far.
As close as you can get. What am I doing? Oh, you didn't unplug.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't?
No.
Oh, well, then we can't go up any, we can't go up any further. I thought it was plugged in. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Just leave that there, then. That's fine.
Maybe like right there?
A little back a little bit.
I should have done this earlier.
Well, as I announced, if you have the first three rows, and I just wanted to include you folks in those three rows, so that's why I had to move to you, Mohammed the Mountain or something like that, right? Nice to be with you guys, okay? Going to be a little different tonight, because I'm trying to blend in some management leadership type things with spiritual things. What's your name again? Kurt. Kurt mentioned to me that you know, all of these things about the models and everything that I teach, the model netics. And what I did was I got a hold of a management course that I told him, like the baseball player, it's been very good to me, okay? Very good. And what I did with that management course and leadership course in teaching Bible classes at church and everything, try to blend it in so that those principles that are very sound and down to earth and good basic principles can be put in our Bible classes, in the teaching, and in the spiritual aspect of things, all right? That's where we're coming from here. So it's going to be a little different, but obviously the emphasis on spiritual. As he mentioned, January will be 36 years as an elder, okay? And as I told him last night at dinner, seems like only 50. Okay? And I think those of you who have been in the church understand what I mean. But it has been a pleasure to serve, because that's what it's all about. If you said, what is it all about, Rod? What it's about is getting to heaven. Okay? Isn't that what it's all about? Living our life on this earth so that one day we can reach heaven. And I'll tell you, I'm not quite as old as this guy, but I'm getting there. I'm probably older than you. No, I'm not. No, he's older than mine. Okay? You know. No, look. The older I get, and some of you, you got the gray hair out there, you can appreciate this. Don't we think about heaven more? Huh? The older you get, the more you think about, where am I going to spend eternity? And that becomes very important to us. Where are we going to spend eternity? I lost my wife 2.5 years ago. She had Alzheimer's. So I really lost her about 7 years ago. But the point being that I know she's in heaven. My sister-in-law took a picture. She was a photographer. She took a picture of the wife and myself on our 50th anniversary. It hangs over the mantle in the family room. You know what I do every night? Say goodnight to her. Every night. Usually it's the same kind of words. I'm getting kind of bad at trying to come up with something new. But I say goodnight to her, and I say, dear, I hope to see you in heaven, okay? That's really my message to her every evening, because I know she's gone there, all right? All right, enough of my background and all that stuff. I understand you had a sermon last week on motivation. Is that right?
You do like this.
They don't remember anything.
I'm trying to block it out.
There was a sermon?
Yeah.
They don't even remember I was here.
Well, let me say something about this young man.
Okay.
Young man.
Don't say too much.
No, I'm very proud of him. And, you know, we had something to do at Newland Street about sending him to Bear Valley School of Preaching, and I want you to know I'm proud of him, okay? And I want to try to help him, and I know you guys want to help each other. Because what we need to do, I'll do a little preaching right now. What we need to do in the church more today than we've ever done is get back this feeling of family. Do you agree with me? The family atmosphere of the church, that we can rely on one another, that we love one another, that we have each other in our homes. Okay, look at me, I'm almost falling. I'm getting that old.
You are old.
What we're saying is that we need to have family atmosphere in the church. Well, there's all kinds of scripture that support this. The body being supported. What about the eye and the ear? And if one hurts, the other hurts. And so what we're saying is we need more family type of atmosphere. So please try to install that here, okay? As I'm trying to install it at Newland Street. Because church and church life does not seem to be important to people in our culture. Is that what you're finding? They don't even think it's necessary to go to church anymore. All right? And believe me, we need support groups. We support one another. And that's what we need. Now, back to motivation. They don't remember a thing about your sermon.
It was long.
Huh? It was long.
Too long. Does he have trouble coming in for a landing? Huh? Is that the problem? I want you to participate with me. What is it that, if I say, give me a definition of motivation, what would you say? How would you define motivation? What is motivation?
A reason to get out of bed.
What's that?
A reason to get out of bed.
Reason to get out of bed. Okay. Don't really care for that one.
try being honest.
Anybody on this side have a better one?
Converting an idea into action.
What's that?
Having an idea converted into action or a thought into
action.
Ah,
okay. An idea converted into action. His idea is to get out of bed.
Same thing.
And action is actually getting out of bed, right?
Okay.
Well, you know, when you look at... I keep getting ahead of you guys, but I'm sorry.
You get behind us.
What's that?
You're getting behind us, not ahead of us.
Well, I have the motivation to come back. Okay? What we're saying really is, in my definition, I'm going to give you a three-word definition for motivation. Three words. Desire for change. Think about that. If I'm motivated, I have a desire for change. Now, not all change is good. We know that. But here, are you ready? Those of you taking notes, get ready. This is very profound, very profound. If it doesn't change, it stays the same. Isn't that profound? But isn't that true? See, not all change is good, but if this church, for instance, is going to grow, something's going to change. That's all we mean. The gospel doesn't change, we know that, okay? God's gospel does not change. But methods of trying to get people to obey it and everything else, we've got to change some things. That doesn't mean that all change is good, because some of it doesn't do very much good. But we have to change something. And motivation is caused, or really when you define it, it's my wants and my needs. Now, what's the problem with wants and needs? I want things I don't need. Ice cream. Pie. I want all of those things, but I don't need them. So we have to identify what's really wants and what's needs. And then we're off running about motivation. And what we have is kind of a gap. Here's what we want, and here's where we are. We got to fill that gap. And when the brother back here said it on target, when we take that action, whatever it is, then we started on the road to motivation. And see, motivation, in my opinion, springs out of dissatisfaction. Are you with me there? It springs out of dissatisfaction. And the question always is, how dissatisfied are you? I'm not talking about grumbly kind of dissatisfaction. I'm talking about the status quo, whatever it is. Wherever I am right now, I've got to be a little dissatisfied with that. Or I'm not going to do what?
Be motivated.
I'm not going to be motivated. I'm not going to change anything. Cute little stories told about dissatisfaction. A 7-year-old child, this is the sad part, has not spoken since birth. Parents have learned to cope with this, as tragic as it is. One morning at the breakfast table, the kid says, "My toast is burnt." And the parents are shocked. What you can talk? Yes, he says, "Up to now, everything has been fine." Now that's a fictitious story, but it's cute. From the standpoint that when we get dissatisfied enough, that's when things happen. I have recently been on the Nutrisystem diet. You all acquainted with Marie Osmond? I am not yet into the cute little black dress. Okay. But I have been successful. I've lost some weight in that plan. But what did I have to do? I had to get dissatisfied with where I was. I
had to give up ice cream.
Yeah. And I had to give up ice cream. That's the action part, okay? Because when you're dissatisfied enough, things start to happen. Are you dissatisfied with the size of this congregation?
Some are.
Some are, huh?
No, they like a small church.
They like a small church.
Yeah.
I don't. I want everybody to be saved. Don't you really? Yeah, you do. I know you do. I know what you're saying. You like that small family atmosphere.
I didn't say I did. I'd say some do.
Some do. You're right there. Okay, you're right. Some do. But what we're saying is let me show you this way. What we have to do is kind of climb what I call the attitude stair steps, all right? Can you see this okay, all of you? And what we do is we go through, I'm gonna just kind of the stair step approach here. What we wanna do is get up here, pardon my writing now, I got a little shaky bit on the right hand, but what we want to do is take an action here to change something. That's what we want to do. We want to get to the top of the staircase with our attitudes and everything. What we want to take is action up here. That's A-C-T-I-O-N, okay? Now, we don't get there overnight. You just don't take action on something. You go through a series of attitudinal changes. That's what happens to us. What we have to do first is aware. Awareness has to be there. I have to be aware of something. We kind of kid about that at times. We talk about people who go through life unaware. They're just kind of floundering, okay? They don't even know what's happening. Awareness is needed. I need to be aware of some certain things, okay? I need also to understand. That's key too. The understanding is next. I'm going to give you some examples on this. Then next, I need to be concerned. And then we're talking about real discern, being concerned. That's dissatisfaction. Once I reach this level, I can then take action to change it. That's what we're talking about. And when, before we go through this awareness, understanding, concern. Now, when my son was younger, and he's supposed to be studying, for instance, in school. Are you listening back here, kid? Those of you who are younger. I talked to Mark. His name was Mark. I say, hey, Mark, are you aware that you should be studying tonight? Do you understand that's how you're going to get a decent grade? Does that concern you, son, that you're going to get a failing grade? You know what he would tell me? No. Now, he had already climbed this as a teenager. He's aware, he understands, but he's concerned. But it was girls that he was concerned about, okay? What we need to be is aware of certain things. We need to understand it, comprehend it. We need to be concerned, and we really need to be concerned, which is dissatisfied. I just talked about weight loss. Look at weight loss with this little illustration. I'm aware that I need to take off more calories than I put on. I know that. I'm not that dumb. I understand that I like to look better. All right? I'm concerned about that. I'd like to be more pleasing in weight. But I have to ask myself a question. Am I really dissatisfied? And the answer has been for 80-some years, no. Okay? God made me this way, and that's just the way I'm going to be. No? If I get dissatisfied enough, then I go on the Nutrisystem diet. Now, do you see the steps of salvation connected with this little illustration? We want people to obey the gospel, right? How are they going to obey if they're not aware of it? Got to make them aware of it. They have got to understand the gospel. We can't force it down people's throat. They have to understand what the gospel means to them. And then we want them what? Do you see this whole principle of advertising? That's how they advertise products. They get us concerned that we don't have something that we should have. And so they want to create this dissatisfaction. Well, that's what we need to do with the gospel message. We need to create a concern that they have, and they're so dissatisfied, they don't have it. And they don't have that hope of heaven. If we could get to that point with them, they're going to take an action to repent and be baptized and wash away their sins. Right? The model works, okay? Works on everything, really. If you want to improve, if you want to change something, we have to climb that staircase. And that requires a series of attitudinal changes. That's really what we're talking about here. All right? Are there questions on that with anybody or comments? Anyone would like to make? I'm starting the lecture. I don't like that. What do you think?
We like lectures.
One, two, three.
We like lectures.
You like that?
Okay. I once heard a speaker one time said something that said, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. this goes to your motivation. And his came back was, well, do you like to eat? Do you like to have a roof over your head? Do you like to have clothes to wear? Yes, those four things. Well, then, in order to have those things, you have to work. And I think that's kind of goes to your motivation type thing.
Your motivation is,
in some cases, it's actually doing something you may not really want to do, but you have a higher goal that urges you to do it.
Good point.
So that's kind of what we're talking about here, and it's that motivation, which is a desire for change, which springs out of dissatisfaction, and we need to change our attitudes towards things as we get all of this. And there's all kinds of illustrations on this. When I first started teaching this material, my illustration was smokers. Okay? Look at that chart with smokers. Are you aware that, you know, it could be harmful to your health? Do you understand that? It might cause a disease? And we didn't realize this at first years ago, okay? My dad was a smoker almost all of his life. He didn't realize that. But the whole thought here is, that's why he wasn't concerned about it. But now we've got a population that gets concerned about it, and rightly so. And then they're dissatisfied enough to try to fix that situation. And so it requires an action. And I think that really helps us in our attitudinal changes as we get to that point, okay? Now, I want to share with you one of the, what did I leave that eraser? Way up here. Hold on. I'll be back. This occurred advertised that he wanted me to cover a model that I teach called the Seven Ports of Life. And this will take just a second to draw it up, but it's a circle in the middle, and then seven lines going out. Seven lines. In here is you and me, okay? Us. We have some decisions to make. And so what we're talking about here, I call it in my course that I taught, the seven ports of life. Ports where ships sail in and out of. That's the message here. And I don't know exactly how many ships sail our seas, but there's many, many ships that sail our seas today. And you know, we rarely hear of a mishap. Once in a while, but rarely do we hear of a mishap. Why? Because in my case down south, they're leaving from San Pedro, the port of San Pedro, and they're sailing or, you know, moving over to Hawaii or Honolulu or someplace, whatever, okay? They got one port to one port. Life is not that way. We sail in and out of at least seven ports of life, okay? Every day. And we make decisions every day based on that, okay? Let me put the ports up here. What we have here is, first of all, a family port of life. We have a job port of life. We have health concerns. Health. We have recreation. Don't take that away from me, please. We have community type of programs that we're involved in, PTA or whatever. We have spiritual type of activity. Or what we would say, church. What else do we have? I'm missing one. Hold on, I gotta look at notes. Education, summer school. Different phases of education. Now, be my guest, if you think, well, I see eight ports, that's fine. Same story is gonna be told here, okay? What we're saying is that there's 24 hours in a day. Who makes the decision of how much time we're going to spend in these ports? Who is it that makes the decision?
Yourself.
Us. Me, you, okay? We have to make a decision of the 24 hours that are in the day. Are we going to spend it here, 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 here? We make that decision every day. Some of it consciously, some of it unconsciously, in a sense. We don't realize we make, but we have to make it. Now, what all goes into that? Well, there's 24 hours in a day. That's all. Anybody found more than that? That's it. 24 hours a day. And you ever heard of this principle, trade-off principle? What's a trade-off to you? You ever heard that expression, trade-off? What's it mean?
You're going to switch one thing to another.
Yeah. Time spent in one port means you can't spend it in the other port. Now, I'm first drawing this thing up and talking about it based upon the outside world, so to speak, when I was teaching managers, okay? But do you see the spiritual application, guys? Because although the world would say, I'm going to spend maybe 2 hours total per week at church. And now they don't even want to do that. But what does a Christian need to do? He needs to take the spiritual activity, the spiritual part of his life, into every port of life. If we're going to be a true Christian, we need to be spiritual and act like a Christian in every port of life. We can't be on our jobs acting differently than we did if we were in the church building. Okay? And so we have decisions to make. Priorities to establish. That's really what we're doing. Now, let me just share with you, because Kurt mentioned that I worked with IBM and I spent a lot of time on the road. I went to managers and tried to train them. And there was lots of nights I was away from home. Because of what?
Job.
That's why I was away. Because of that job. Now, if I asked my wife at that time, what's the most important port up there to me? What do you think she would say?
Family.
Hmm?
Family.
To her. Now, what would she think my important port is?
Job.
The job. I look back on my life and just let me share you with you, because I would have changed this had I had a better thought process. One year, I was gone over 250 nights teaching this material to people. Now I was doing, I thought, a good job. Okay? But what suffers when you do that? What's the trade-off? The trade-off is, I'm not with family, I'm not with the spiritual family, I'm on the road. Now, are you feeling a little guilty now? I am. I did, okay? And so all we're saying is, this is a problem for us, this is a dilemma. And it's, what we're saying is that these ports are all important. You know what? How we get around this sometimes? We try what I call multiple port activity. You know, if I can use the same time and get into lots of ports of life, that's goodness. So when I was younger, I would take my daughter to the beach. I would jog. I would take a religious book that educates me, and I'd feel pretty good. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
See, if we can have that multiple port activity, that makes us feel better. All right. Now, one other feature with this, or couple of others. If I ask you, where do the successful giants in industry, Trump is a big name now, right? Men like that or women like that? What kind of port people do you think they are? How many ports are they really in?
Maybe two.
You got it. He's holding up one finger. They're probably one port people. Okay? Now, if you're going to only be in one port, would it be the spiritual port, please? Okay? That's really, but we really don't want that. Because the Bible tells us that we need to be more than one port people. We need to be concerned with our jobs. We need to be concerned with our families. We need to be concerned with other things. But I'll tell you what, before you know it, you may be a one-port person if you're not careful. So that becomes very important to us. And I might say that if you will put the emphasis on the spiritual and probably the educational port, it's going to help you in all the other ports. Okay? That's what's going to help. Now, let's let the line that's running out here equal what I call the role. This is the role. Because we have many, what I'm calling ports of life, but the ports of life are also where the goals are housed. When we have goals in this life, where are they? They're out here in these ports. That's where they're housed. I had several goals when I was working on the job. I wanted to get promoted, I wanted to get this next level. You know, all of that kind of stuff here happened. I want to be a good father, I want to be a good grandfather, now I'm a great grandfather, twice. I want to be a good husband. You follow what I'm saying there, that we have goals in all those ports of life. But the question always is, another word for role here is behavior. See, I strongly believe that behavior, the way we act, our behavior, is goal-directed. Think about that a minute. Behavior is goal-directed. Another way of saying that is, everything I do for a reason, and it makes sense to me. It may not to you, because we all have various goals. I know when I was raising my three kids, they behaved in such a way to reach their goals. And would you believe some of them weren't my goals for them? Isn't that true? Okay? We all have our individual goals, and it made sense to them. They've got to keep up with the peers. They've got to they have their own goals. And so what we need to do here is we have to ask the question of ourselves, am I willing to play the role the goal calls for? If I'm not willing to play the role the goal calls for, you know what? I just want you to think it's a goal, because it really isn't. Am I right? This is what happens to us. Let's look at the recreation port of life for a minute. I love to golf. I love to play golf. And I had goals. Lower that score, okay? Keep getting lower score. So my goal is to, one of these days, be able to shoot par. But my role I want to play is I'd like to practice every 6 months. Conflict. There's conflict going on. Because I'm not willing to play the role the goal calls for. I probably wouldn't be a par shooter if I spent 365 hours a day on the golf course. But nevertheless, that's just an illustration. Are we willing to play the role the goal calls for? That's the key. And We have to establish priorities, and we have to look at that together. How are we doing with time? We only have a few minutes left. See, behavior, as I said before, is goal-directed, and so therefore, we need to establish goals, and that these roles and goals get in conflict. I want to be the loving family man, but my problem is I'm spending too much time on the job. Conflict, okay? So, do you see that? You have questions on that at all? Or does it make sense? Now, what am I trying to impress here tonight on me as well as you? Let's emphasize the spiritual life in all of these ports. That's what I'm, you know, I can't go to an IBM event when I was working with them and carouse and drink and things that all of them did. If I'm trying to live a spiritual life, I just can't do that. And so what we're saying is, don't place ourselves in those conflicts, okay? Don't get in that out situation, because they happen in life. And we make decisions, we set the priorities. Now, what does all of this cause in our lives?
What does it cause?
Yeah, what's the result of this? I'll tell you what it is.
We fail.
What's that?
Fail
sometimes, and it brings about what? Anxiety. Popular word today, stress. You ever heard this one today? I'm stressed out. Well, so what? Okay, you know, I'm stressed out too. You know? I can tell you that this is what causes stress. I can't tell you how to fix it. You got to do that. But It is very tough, but it causes stress. It causes, you know what the principal causes of anxiety are? The first one is guilt feelings. I feel guilty sometimes when I teach this, okay? Guilt feelings are good for us if they cause an action to change something, right? This is really what we're talking about here. Another cause of this stress or anxiety is a lack of a sense of purpose. People do not have a sense of purpose. We as Christians have a sense of purpose. Our sense of purpose is to live the Christian life and get to heaven. That's what we want. And you know the old adage, you're probably not going to get there unless you take somebody with you. Okay? So the whole point is to do that kind, be that kind of person, all right? We have to. Now, we mentioned the fact that there's out in here are all the goals of life. And there's a couple of tragedies connected with goals. The first tragedy is not reaching your goals. I've had a goal out there and I didn't reach it. And I feel guilt about that. And so that causes me stress and anxiety. So one of the two tragedies is not reaching your goals. That's bad. You know what the second one is? Reaching your goals. Because if you reach your goals on this earth, and you will really make it in one of these ports or all of them, that's reaching your goals, and now what? You don't have anything else to reach for. And that's bad. As a Christian, we have to have that goal always before us. That goal is heaven. I did a lesson once. I've left it. He's probably going to give it. But is heaven your goal? That's a good question. Okay? Is heaven really your goal? Are you willing to play the role that the goal calls for? That's the key in our lives. So my encouragement tonight is, I'll take us all in and let's practice it together. Let me just get us back to the scriptures real quick here, because I would encourage you as a congregation to be this kind of church, the kind of church that is mentioned in 1 Thessalonians, the first chapter. You know, when we look at the seven churches of Asia, all but one of those, there was a lot of bad things about the church that Jesus mentions. He mentions the fact that they lost their first love, that they were lukewarm, right? All of those kinds of things. He doesn't have much bad to say about the church in Thessalonica. And what he had to say was things that they could improve on. But he did commend them and congratulate them, in a sense, for what was happening. Paul had established that church earlier on his missionary, second missionary journey. Now he's writing back to them from Corinth, and he's telling them, here's what I want you to be. I commend you because you, let me admit, verse 3, you have a work of faith, a labor of love, and patience of hope. I want you all to strive for those things. Be a congregation that has a work of faith. Be one that labors in love. Be one that is patient and hopeful, okay? He says in verse 6, I want you to be followers of the Lord. That's what we all want to be. Number 7, verse 7. He wants us to be, or you commended them to be, examples to the followers. We need to be examples. I'll tell you what, if you don't think you're an example to somebody, you're wrong. You're an example to someone, okay? More than one, probably. And then in verse 8, he says, the word of the Lord sounded out of their faith that was spoken of. I don't know about you, but I want the congregation where I am an elder to be the kind of congregation that when people think about us, the word of the Lord speaks from there, okay? That may be helping missionaries like you do in Guatemala, I understand, okay? Be that kind, okay? Hey, Kurt.
Yes, sir.
I'm finished.
Amen.
No, it's been a pleasure. I hope that some of this has helped. I told you it's going to be a little different because what I've tried to do is blend in some of the things I picked up in the management deal and teaching managers, but applying them in the spiritual world, okay? And it can be done and should be done. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, Rod. And that's just a tiny little glimpse.